Emmy winner Kira Sedgwick is here to talk about Girl Weekend that's premiering at the Sundance Film Festival and give us her spin on our LGBTQ issues. Hi, Kira.
Hi.
Tell us about your project, Girls Weekend.
So Girls Weekend is what we call a proof of concept for a series. So we're hoping to sell it as a series. It was conceived as a series, but we thought, you know, the best way to really show someone instead of try to explain to them what a show is about is to actually, you know, show them a piece of the show. And so we worked for a really long time, you know, getting something together that was powerful and, you know, significant and really grabs you and really makes you want more in a very short amount of time, in 10 minutes. I think that, you know, the hope is that when you finish watching it, you go, oh, God, I really want to see what happens. So it's actually harder than one would imagine to, like, pull 10 minutes out of a pilot and show just 10 minutes. So we kind of wrote something that is probably wouldn't be the sequence exactly of events as they occur in a longer half hour. But we kind of truncated a couple of juicy bits into 10 minutes. And we had really just put it together in order to use it as a selling tool. And then my producer, Valerie Stadler, said, you know, I think we should submit this to Sundance and see if it gets in. So, you know, the wonderful thing about Sundance right now is that they have a whole section called Indie Episodic. And in the Indie Episodic section, they have pilots that are done, that are shot, but they also have proof of concept for series, which is what ours is, 10 minutes.
How did you become involved with doing this project?
Well, I started a production company with a very, very old friend of mine named Valerie Stadler. We grew up in the city together in New York. We met each other when we were 14, so it's been many, many years. And she and I and Meredith Bagby started a company about a year and a half ago called Big Swing. And we definitely primarily want to focus on women's stories and, you know, diverse stories and stories about people that we don't normally see on television. And we were big fans of Allie Leibgott. Allie wrote on Transparent. She's currently writing on The Conners. She's also a stand-up comedian, and she's been writing novels and poetry for many decades. And I think she's hilarious, and so does Val. And after we saw her stand-up, it really sealed the deal for us, and we brought her into the office and said, you know, we think that there should be a show that's just about you. We think you should be the lead of your own show. And we said, you know, what do you have? And she pitched this idea called A Very Queer Christmas, based on her life where she goes home to Vegas, where her family lives, and they are extremely, you know, right wing, and she has a sibling that's pretty homophobic, and she goes back home to what she thinks is going to be a short amount of time, and something happens while she's there, and she needs to make a choice about whether or not to stay. And we really thought the story was hilarious, but it was also very touching and really spoke to something that I think is so key right now, which is how do we have the conversation between right wing and left wing? How do we deal with the polarization that is America right now? And how do we deal with the fact that we are so cut off from each other that we refuse to even consider somebody else's opinion? And this really lined up so beautifully with that concept because ultimately it is about people with very different viewpoints about everything having to come together. And because they're family, you can't really divorce your family and you either cut off ties forever. But if you don't want to do that, you have to talk and communicate and come to compromise and understanding and walk around in the other person's shoes for a little while. So really, this was her idea that fit in just so well with sort of big ticket items that I feel are really important to be conversing about right now in America.
What do you hope to accomplish with Girls Weekend?
We hope to sell it. You know, currently Sundance, they're in the episodic section, is just in their second, in their nascent. They're really just growing, and it's not really a market yet. But what we hope to do is to get people talking about it and get people interested in the concept of buying it. We also hope that people will enjoy it. I mean, ultimately, you know, you want to entertain people. And we want to make people laugh, and we want to make people cry in 10 minutes and then want more. So, but ultimately, it really is about trying to get people, you know, buzzing about it.
You did achieve your goal, because as soon as I watched it, I immediately wanted to see more.
That's great. Thank you. Good. I'm glad.
What is your personal commitment to LGBTQ civil rights?
Well, I mean, I think I've been committed to those rights for decades. Valerie is queer and is married to a trans man. And, you know, she's been in my life from the time that I was very, very young. I grew up in New York. This is a very, you know, open community, at least on the face of it. I'm a lefty liberal, and I believe in equal rights for everybody. And that absolutely includes the LGBTQ community. You know, I think that part of doing that as a storyteller, as a, you know, and as an actor and now as a director, is to put stuff out there that really talks about what it is to be gay, or at least, you know, Allie is the only queer person in her family in this story. Val is the only queer person in her family, and yet we're parts of family. And, you know, how do we show in a small way how families accept or reject a child, and then, you know, have that as a, you know, an example of what it's like in society, and that some people are embracing of others' differences and some people are scared and frightened and want to limit their ability to do things in the world. So I feel like, I mean, if you look at our slate, the big swing slate, a lot of it has to do with queer people on one end of the spectrum or another. There are voices that we're not used to seeing. There's faces that we're not used to seeing. There's people that look like Allie that we're not used to seeing on television. And I think that for me, that's a big part of my commitment. I did a movie called Story of a Girl, and Kevin plays a gay man living openly in a small community. And, you know, it's not necessarily something that he really, well, he does actually talk about it in the movie. He talks about, it was based on a book that I made into a film last year, year before last. And he talks about the fact that he got married to two women knowing he was gay. I mean, just getting that out in the world, just talking about that, you know, really reveals the struggle of what it's like to be gay and how hard it was for him to really come to terms with that. There's so many people like that in the world. So that's my job as a storyteller, right, is to just show all sides of humanity and all different shapes and sizes and sexual preferences.
With LGBTQ teens are 4 times more likely to attempt suicide than their heterosexual peers after facing bullying incidents, what advice would you have for these kids?
Oh, my God. You know, I thought that campaign where they talked about where gay and straight people, I think, talked about it gets better. Those, you know, public service announcements and YouTube videos where that, you know, a lot of people did talking to kids by way of social media. I thought that was really powerful. Oh, my God, it's such a tragic statistic. I guess the advice is, you know, GLSEN is a very big part of helping to create a safe space in schools. They literally give teachers kits on understanding how to make this a safe environment for gay, lesbian, trans, queer kids. And I think we, like everything, I think we have to educate people so that they're not so scared. I think we need to nip bullying in the bud. I think we need to understand the gravitas. I think we need to understand that kids are getting killed or dying because they're getting bullied. And it's not just something that teens do. And it's like not just something that needs to be an accepted part of growing up in the world right now. It can't be, because with social media, these words are more and more powerful. Seeing them in black and white, you know, seeing a text, seeing stuff on your Facebook page, it's cruel and it's indecent and it kills. So I just think we need to continue having the conversation about it, and we need to educate teachers and people in school.
How can people get information about Girls Weekend?
Well, they can go onto the Sundance site and go to the Indie Episodic section. There are 2 programs. There's an Indie Episodic 1, there's Indie Episodic 2. We are an Indie Episodic 1. And within that program, it's probably about an hour. I would guess you get tickets and you see our show as well as a couple other things that are there.
What other projects are you working on?
Oh, God. We have so many things we're working on. We have a movie that we sold to Netflix that is centering around a girl, a teenager. We have something at Disney streaming. We have something called Aristotle and Dante Discover the Secrets of the Universe, which is a beloved story about two boys falling in love in the 1950s in Mexico. I have a broad comedy centering on a woman who is having a relationship with another woman who she finds out is sleeping with her brother. And then it turns out that her brother and her girlfriend are going to get married, and she has to agree to be a bridesmaid, and how she navigates her way through that difficult task. And we have something about the first class of astronauts that were the first to fly in the shuttle program that included Sally Ride and the first mother to go in space and the first Asian person, the first Jewish person. Like, this was all within the first class of astronauts at the shuttle program. This was right after the civil rights movement had passed, and NASA was looking around and seeing a bunch of like middle-aged white guys and realized that they need to change their tune. And so they sent out basically a memo into newspapers and different magazines saying, are you interested in going to space? And if you are, call this number. And all these, you know, interesting, diverse citizens became the first class of astronauts to fly.
Can you talk a little bit about how Hollywood has changed since the Me Too movement?
We're certainly a lot less tolerant of certain kinds of behavior. I think we're still in process, so it's kind of hard to, I know that in a couple of years we'll have a better sense of like how far have we gone. And what I feel like is clear is that people are no longer, men in particular, are no longer able to, it's not business as usual. Men have had to pay the piper here. I think a lot of people have been removed from their prominent positions because of their heinous and egregious behavior. I think there's nuance to be had, which I think that we're not really navigating very well right now. But I certainly think that the pendulum needs to swing really far in one direction in order to like come back to some sanity around it. So I think that, you know, when somebody is making a claim that, you know, the good news is that for the most part, people are being believed, at least in our little, you know, Hollywood world. And then you look at someone like, you know, Dr. Ford, and this was not the case. So clearly there's some disparity. There's a lot further to go. I'm hoping that what's happening in Hollywood and with organizations like Time's Up, I'm hoping that women are feeling more empowered to speak up when they feel uncomfortable. I'm hoping that we are setting a really good example for our girls coming up in this business, whether they're executives or PAs or in the camera department or actors, you know, that this kind of harassment won't be tolerated and that they need to speak up and that they will be supported when they speak up. My real hope for it is that as we stumble through this, that the girls will be watching and that they will learn from our voices being heard finally.
What's your spin on the fact that in the Oscar nominations this year that there wasn't a woman director nominated?
I think it's a huge mistake because there were some extraordinary movies that were directed by women this year. Deborah Granite, Karin Kusama, Tamara Jenkins, to name just a few. I'm so depressed about it, honestly. And I also am a member of the DGA, and no females were in the feature film were directed as well for DGA Awards. I was nominated for a DGA Award last year, so I don't know. I guess I had a false sense that we were sort of on the right track. Of course, none of these women would want to be singled out simply because they're a woman. However, look, we're still living in a patriarchy. There's no question about it. And I just think that if the same movies were directed by men, it would possibly be a different story. I really hate to say that, but I think it's true. I think we have a bias. I think we have a gender bias about something that's directed by a woman. So it troubles me. It's very depressing. I can tell you that coming up in this business as an actor, I can count on one hand how many female directors I worked with on The Closer, on other movies. So it's not something that we're used to seeing, and we're not used to having good role models in that way, women. It took me so long to wrap my arms around my desire to direct. And I know that a huge part of that was because I was afraid. I think women are more risk averse than men. So I think that, you know, that sort of speaks to the concept of why there aren't more female directors. But I can certainly tell you that I think it's getting better really, really, really slowly. And again, I just think that our girls coming up need to see more women directing, and then they will be more inclined to direct. Things are moving in the right direction. They're just moving painfully slowly.
Do you have a favorite quote or mantra to get you through difficult times?
Honestly, I try to trust that there's a plan already in place, and there's not that much I can do to totally fuck it up. When things don't go my way, I like to say rejection is protection. That feels really good to me. And I also really believe that what's meant to be mine will be mine. And I have to trust that there's something bigger than me and bigger than all of us that's kind of guiding this whole ship.